Okay, it's time to talk wheels. It's the Car Guy Show with automotive consumer tips, industry updates, interviews, and enthusiast news. If you care about cars, this show's for you. Now you're tuned in, so let's get tuned up with your host. Here he is, Steve Ford, the Car Guy.
Hello and welcome to another segment of the Car Guy Show here, coming at you from the broadcast tower of News Talk 990 KTMS and at the speed of light on the World Wide Web. We're connecting you to automotive consumer and enthusiast news, insights, and interviews anywhere you're hearing our signal in Santa Barbara and the surrounding communities. In today's program, the topic we're going to put up on the lift is a visit over to the East Coast for insights on new car safety with the Insurance Institute for Highway Safety. Even as fuel economy becomes an increasingly important factor in new car engineering and consumer purchase decisions, one inevitable trade-off that remains in both cars and trucks is that the smaller you go in vehicle size, the greater the risk, so long as larger cars and trucks operate on the highways. Now, given the vehicle trend of even SUVs evaporating tomorrow, if that occurred, we'd still have to consider just how well vehicles can prevent occupants from being injured in a crash if you're in a smaller vehicle, so long as those commercial vehicles and larger vehicles are on the road, which brings us right over to the need for the expertise of our upcoming guests. We move over to the topic of new car buying into the showroom for a moment from another perspective this week, looking at the consumer view of safety. And it is a factor that ever since Ralph Nader went up against General Motors, or General Motors went up against Ralph Nader in the early 1960s, and certainly even years before that with the famous Tucker with its padded dashboard. In the Tucker, there were no seat belts. In fact, in the front seat area, the passenger or driver was expected to huddle into the front area, the floorboard, which was padded, to avoid getting injured in the collision, sort of like a bunker or a basement, if you will. But I don't think people really had any idea that they would have the time, and they really don't have time to crawl down in the space under the dashboard to avoid injury. But it was good marketing back then. And here we are in 2013, and marketing has largely become selling safety in cars and trucks, because more and more the vehicles are so competitive and so well built and so reliable today, as we hoped they would be. They're still not perfect, and there's a ways to go in a lot of areas of the automotive engineering, but our upcoming guest from the Insurance Institute for Highway Safety is the Vice President of Communications. And I've spoken with him in the past and wanted to have him on. I've asked a few questions along the way, and we'll go into that as we speak. With that, Russ Rader from the Insurance Institute for Highway Safety, welcome to the Car Guy Show.
Hey, thanks for having me on, Steve.
It's a pleasure. And I know it'll be an education. I want to go back to our conversation last week, and I know I'd interviewed somebody a number of years back from the Insurance Institute for Highway Safety about some of the issues related to sport utility vehicles and the safety that was either perceived or actual with those. And sport utility vehicles and light trucks have come a long way. But in the automotive world, the car has become very much a showcase of the best of both active and passive engineering for safety. And I'd love to define those and the crash tests that people see that are from your organization and from you as you put out this information to the media, people like me and others who listen and absorb and read the materials that come out from your organization. One of the more recent things that caught my attention and prompted my call to you last week was looking at a smart car parked side by side in a parallel parking space in a office center, where I could look at the smart car profile from the side view, from the passenger side, and see it with a backdrop of a full-size sport utility vehicle. And it was striking to me to see that smart car as the eye-catching, intriguing vehicle that it is, dwarfed by the sport utility vehicle, which was essentially outlined above, in front, and behind that smart car. And it begged the question in my mind of how could that smart car be considered quote-unquote safe on today's highways, when at any moment it might have an interaction, a collision to be more specific, or a crash, as I think your organization has corrected the term. Or what is it? NHTSA has corrected the term to be crash, no longer collision. Is that right?
Well, it goes back to the word accident.
Yeah.
And replacing that word with crash.
Yeah.
Because accidents imply that they're just something that happens and couldn't be prevented. And we know that most accidents or crashes, in fact,
yeah,
can be prevented, and that's part of what we do.
Yeah, and so I'm right, though. I mean, I don't mean to be right necessarily, but correct in usage that the term crash is really the one you prefer to use.
That's right.
Okay, we don't really have accidents are when a meteorite falls on a house.
Right.
You know,
right.
A crash is when somebody's on their cell phone or tailgating or running a red light or something like that. It's not, they could have avoided it. Fair enough?
That's right, exactly.
Okay. Now, in the new car marketing world, when we talked last week, I didn't know if you would provide something to me that would give me a new assurance that if my daughter or son or my wife or friend were to ask me for a recommendation, if I said, you know, I've seen that the smart car is a well-designed vehicle, and I'm going to move away from that car specifically because I think it's a neat little car, and I don't mean to single it out except by its size. There are many small cars. There's the Fiat 500 we've talked recently about on the show with other guests. Russ, as you'd understand, there's the Mini, based on that Mini Cooper, another relatively well-designed car from many standpoints of safety for its size. And maybe even the crash tests, I believe, support that. But then there are different, you know, we can say crash tests, but you might do well in three and not in the fourth. And so we should hopefully touch base on that. But what I want the audience to know is that, Russ, if I'm correct, you agreed that the issue, the concern, the spotlight focus on looking at vehicle size as still a factor in vehicle safety should be a consideration for vehicle new car purchases or used car purchasers in considering what vehicle they go with. Can you go ahead and expand on this? I know, for example, in your one of your status reports that you sent to me, the death rate per million 1 to 3 year old minis in single vehicle crashes during 2007 was 35 compared with 11 per million for very large cars. Now, again, not against the Mini, but just the physics of the situation. So that moves us away from the smart car. But the Mini in that case identifies a cool looking car, but something people need to realize is the size issue. So please let me give it back to you and have you tell us about size, weight, and how the dynamics work out with safety in new cars today.
Sure. Well, you know, the laws of physics have not been repealed. The laws of physics are always in play in crashes, and
yeah,
that means that people get less protection in the smallest and lightest vehicles when compared to people riding in bigger, heavier vehicles when those vehicles are involved in crashes.
Mm-hmm.
So when you look at the current statistics, and over time, vehicles have become much safer,
yes,
including small vehicles. Small vehicles today are much safer than they were 10 or 15 years ago.
Right.
But the improvements have accrued to vehicles of all sizes during that time.
Right.
So the disparity is still there. That is, the smallest vehicles have a death rate per million of those vehicles on the road of about 65.
Yeah.
65 deaths per million registered mini cars on the road, for example. And you compare that to large cars, and the rate falls to 44, and the largest cars on the road have a death rate of 24 per million. So you can see the disparity there. And it is just the facts that laws of the universe show that when crashes occur, people in lighter vehicles are at an automatic disadvantage, both in crashes with other vehicles, bigger, heavier ones, and also even in single vehicle crashes, people in smaller vehicles are at a disadvantage. And that's because when you hit something like, say, a tree or a pole, for example,
right,
a bigger, heavier vehicle can move that object even a little bit.
Right.
And smaller, lighter vehicles are less able to do that, which increases the forces of, for the people inside the vehicle. So it's a problem not only in multi-vehicle crashes, but in single-vehicle crashes, too.
Well put. Now, let me back up to the data that is represented in that status report that you sent to me last week. When a car crashes into a solid barrier, the outcome depends in part on the size of the front end. As an example of the engineering standpoint noted here in this thing, I actually highlighted this one quote. If one car's front end is long enough to crush twice as much as another car's in a barrier crash at the same speed, its restrained occupants will experience half as much force as the people in the smaller car because it takes them twice as long to stop. Now, I want to jump over to one of the highlighted points here showing two vehicles, one at 3,600 pounds, one at 1,800 pounds. Obviously, the disparity being the weight very clearly here. They could be the same physical size, but we're going on weight alone for a moment. And I'm sure the physical design of the car still is a factor, but one of these cars weighs twice as much as the other. When they collide, each going 40 miles per hour, the heavy car pushes the light one backward at 13 miles per hour. The velocity change of the light car at 53 miles per hour is twice that of the heavier car at 27 miles per hour. So we're talking about, as I picture this and I see it in the illustration, folks, we're talking about a head-on collision where it is that weight factor, regardless of the safety features of the vehicle. If I'm correct, you're talking about Newton's law then again. Russ?
Right, and if you want to think about it in a simple way, if you are looking at a crash, the longer the crush space,
right,
the longer amount of the time before that vehicle comes to a complete stop.
Right.
And the key to protecting people in crashes is to have as
absorption
as long a time as possible to bring the people inside the vehicle to a stop,
right,
because that reduces the forces on people's bodies. So
right,
you have a vehicle that's front hitting something, it's involved in a front-end crash,
right,
the front end of the vehicle is crushing and absorbing or dissipating that energy,
right,
over a period of time. You want the same thing to happen to the people inside the vehicle. You want them to be slowed down over a period of time.
Right.
So when the front end is crushing, they're getting the benefit of the vehicle,
yes,
slowing down,
yes,
gradually.
Right.
And then their seatbelt and airbag is are working together to add additional cushioning to slow their stop. Because,
yeah,
as the car is, if a car is going 40 miles an hour and crashes into a wall, it's coming to a stop from 40 miles an hour to zero.
Progression.
As the car begins to come to a stop, the people inside the vehicle are continuing to move at 40 miles per hour.
Yes.
And you want to bring them to a stop gradually as well.
And if you're in a very small car, that margin is reduced for the deceleration absorption by other parts of the car.
That's right. And the seatbelts and airbags, yeah, then have to have a much harder job,
yep,
in trying to reduce the forces on the person's body.
Very good. Now, folks might appreciate this term as a little, to make it more pointed. One of the things referenced that I circled in the status report was measured intrusion, and I think that really drives it home. You know, people think about sort of being insulated from the outside world, and they're mostly hearing so far in our conversation, Russ. Folks, if you just tuned in, we're talking with the Insurance Institute for Highway Safety with Russ Rader, who is Vice President of Communications, and we're talking about crashes in 2013. New cars, as good as they are, they still include the risk that is as sharp as ever of losing a life, but is reduced by the dimensions that are created by airbags and crumple zones and absorption of energy, if I'm correct, Russ, in describing that, before the collision, let's say, or not the collision, but the crash, if you will, of the occupants of the vehicle with the A-pillar, that first pillar outside the front windshield, or the dashboard or the steering wheel or any other object in front of them or beside them. And when we use the term intrusion, Russ, and I'm saying we as just in general, but you use that clinically really as a lab term, intrusion meaning there's a point at which you're no longer dealing with just the airbag and the dashboard. You could have the front end of the vehicle coming inside the passenger compartment at a high, if it's a high enough speed crash. Can you tell us about that?
Yeah,
side
that
collision?
Is one of the important parts of how you make a car more crash-worthy is we know that a lot of the serious injuries that occur in high-speed crashes happen because the occupant compartment crumples.
Yes.
And parts of the interior, parts of the structure of the vehicle intrude into the space where the people are sitting.
Right.
And so manufacturers over time have learned how to design the safety cage, the occupant compartment around the occupants, in a way that it's very strong so that even though the front end of the vehicle is crushing and dissipating that energy, it is preventing the occupant compartment, the structure of the occupant compartment is strong enough that it does not crush or collapse in the crash.
Yes.
And then
the safety cage, I think we hear it referred to, right, a lot in some manufacturers.
Right, and you have the safety cage holds up.
Yeah.
Then the seatbelts and airbags can do their job to protect the people inside. It's very analogous to any kind of packaging of a fragile object. If you're going to send a fragile object to a relative across country, you want that
bubble
fragile
wrap.
Object to be as packed as well as possible and cushioned.
Right.
So
from
that
jolts.
If the box crushes, if the box stays intact, then the object inside is more likely to stay intact.
Very good. Okay. Now let me take that theory, because I realize that's fact-based, you know, physical evidence for that to support that. But I do recall as a journalist getting a video sent to me. I'm not sure if it was directly from you or your organization or another organization, but I think you might remember this if it were from the Insurance Institute for Highway Safety. And that is a video that showed a 1958 Chevrolet Impala colliding with a 2008 Chevrolet Impala at a slight offset. Was that from you folks?
Yes, that was a test that we did for our 50th anniversary.
Okay. And is that video still available anywhere online? Is it on YouTube?
Yeah. You can see that video in several different places on YouTube, but in particular on the IIHS YouTube channel.
Okay.
It is one of the prominent videos there.
IIHS.gov or ORG?
Well, that is the Institute's website, but you go to YouTube/IIHS, you'll be taken to the IIHS YouTube channel, and you can see all of our crash test videos, including that 1959 Bel Air test.
1959, okay. Now, if folks are driving, I don't want to ask them to try to write. It's enough that they're maybe talking on a hands-free cell phone and splitting their attention, so we don't want to add a third dimension to it. They might remember YouTube. What would be the title if they want to try to remember to catch this video?
Yeah, if they go to YouTube and type in the search box crash test or 1959 Bel Air crash test, it'll come up. It's been posted in many different places on YouTube.
Yeah. The perception that I had, and was a flawed perception, not the only one I have that's flawed, I'm sure, but one of them that was to be dispelled at once by that video, was my belief that a 59 Chevrolet Bel Air would be a safe vehicle to drive in because it's got this massive sheet metal and it's so big. And if I'm correct, the driver did not live in that dummy test.
That's right. It would have been a fatal crash if that had been a real person.
And in the Chevrolet Malibu, the driver lived, or the dummy indicated the damage to the occupant was such that the driver would have potentially lived.
Right. It was a crash that demonstrated pretty clearly how vehicles in the past were not designed to crash in the way that they are designed to do so today.
Yep.
They did not have the kinds of stiff occupant compartments.
And protection. It was an illusion then. Is that fair to say?
Well, I think that people think about those big boats from the 1950s as being very safe, having lots of metal, but they simply just weren't built to crash and protect people like today's cars.
Right. The fact that they had lots of sheet metal and hardware had nothing to do with how easily that hardware could be swept aside by an incoming vehicle crashing into that car.
And what happened in the Bel Air is that, first of all, there were no seat belts.
Yeah.
In vehicles in 1959, but what you also see is the severe intrusion in the Bel Air that we were talking about before.
And we need to...
Dashboard coming back toward the driver dummy.
Right.
In fact, the steering wheel itself became sort of a spear coming back into the driver's face and almost pushing the driver dummy's head back into the rear seat.
Oh, my gosh. You know, and so back in the 60s, we would have been a little frustrated with Ralph Nader inside the auto industry, but would you say he really was there somebody else that gets the credit for the kicking this up to visibility? It's hard to deny Ralph Nader his place.
Well, there was certainly was that marked Ralph Nader's book, Unsafe at Any Speed, marked a shift in the thinking about how we deal with auto safety.
He brought it
to the emergence of scientists like Dr. Bill Haddon, who was the first president of the Insurance Institute for Highway Safety, and prior to that, he was the head of what became the Federal Regulatory Agency.
My gosh, I'm sorry that I didn't make the connection. If we're talking Corvair, you know, as a big highlight, the Insurance Institute for Highway Safety was founded in 1959.
That's right. Okay. And we changed into a research organization in the late 60s, 1969, as this shift in the scientific approach to highway safety began, where it was no longer about people realized that just telling people to be safe out there and educate drivers about safety wasn't the way to approach it, that we needed to have a multi-pronged approach, including making cars safer.
And you then would quantify it with data. And what I'd like to do, if it's okay with you, is this, and I'll edit this part out, this is an example of where I can jump in with this pre-record, is say, let's go out to the break, and when we come back, we'll talk about the crash test and the numbers and what you should be able to go away from this show with in terms of arming yourself with the right perspective. Is that fair to do?
That'd be perfect.
Okay. And so then, Russ, with that, as we come up on a station break here, I'd like to ask you if we might reward the audience for their patience in hearing the bad news about cars to tell them the good news about information when they shop, how they can make sense out of these crash tests that you report today, and that NHTSA, National Highway Traffic Safety Administration, is also involved with spotlighting and monitoring in the marketplace. When we come back, if it's okay with you, Russ, we'll send people off with a little education on what they can do here today in 2013.
Great. Sounds
okay.
Good.
Folks, stay with us. We're going to come back, give you some tips on buying cars today, coming out of the why you need to know side of this story, and move into what you need to know. I'm Steve Ford, the car guy, with Russ Rader from the Insurance Institute for Highway Safety. You're tuned in to News Talk 990 KTMS. We'll be right back.
When it comes to keeping your wheels looking like new, the majority of auto glass businesses have state-of-the-art tools and equipment. What is harder to find are the industry-certified craftspeople and the highest levels of service. Tri-County Auto Glass. Rock chip repairs or glass replacement with lifetime repair credit, a positive word-of-mouth reputation may bring you in. Courtesy quality and that new window glass shine will bring you back. Tri-County Auto Glass, downtown Santa Barbara, 963-6200. That's 963-6200.
Hey, you know about getting the job done right. If you want it done right, do it yourself. Well, that's what car and truck buffs, owners of classics, custom cars, and wise consumers know when they visit Daily Car Bath, Santa Barbara's downtown coin-operated car wash supercenter for more than 40 years. After discovering Daily Car Bath for my own cars, I've returned to give my machines the superior wash and cleaning care that all car buffs appreciate. At Daily Car Bath, you'll find premium hog's hair wash brushes with conditioned soft water and five-star with foaming high-sudsing auto shampoo that literally floats debris off your vehicle's finish, along with consistent high-pressure washing and available non-acid low-pressure wheel and tire cleaner. And for that special finish, DINI spot-free rinse to help dissolve and eliminate mineral spot, and spray wax formulated with clear coat protectant included in the cycle. See why Daily Car Bath is known as the place where customers send their friends. And take it from a fellow car buff. When it comes to the best in car care appearance, you'll find it all at Daily Car Bath. Open 24 hours a day at the corner of Anna Kappa and Coda Streets. Quality, economy, and that showroom shine. And we are back, and we are picking up where we left off with Russ Rader from the Insurance Institute for Highway Safety. You're tuned in to the Car Guy Show on News Talk 990 KTMS, Santa Barbara, and we're talking about what you need to know to be sharp in the showroom. Even used cars have safety ratings you can look up, but brand new cars, you can go to the web and do the research right now. But Russ, thanks for standing by. When we go back into this topic, I want to toss it back to you to ask you, tell us about the several different crash tests that you think people should understand in the star ratings, if you could.
Well, crash worthiness, the safety of a vehicle, how well it protects people in crashes, is that information is now widely available for consumers. A big change from the way it was in 1959 when the Chevrolet Bel Airs ruled the streets.
Yeah.
And crash testing by the insurance industry, the Insurance Institute for Highway Safety, and also by the federal government gives consumers a wealth of information about how vehicles would perform in crashes. So if safety is a big priority, you can check the crash test ratings, the star ratings that the federal government, the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration, puts out, and the ratings by the Institute, which are on a different scale, good, acceptable, marginal, or poor.
Right.
And the Institute's tests are different tests that are testing for different parameters of vehicle performance. So ideally, you should be, when you're looking for a vehicle, you should be able to find one that earns 4 or 5 stars in the government's tests and is also good top safety pick in the Institute's tests.
Now, let me ask you if you would, in the time we've got, which is just a couple of minutes, but I think it would be neat to have you help folks understand that there is more than one test. They might picture, you know, the front barrier test where the vehicle runs into a solid object, but there's the T-bone, the side collision, right, which is a real concern since I believe it was 1994 that the side impact protection was mandated for the United States. All vehicles sold here had to add that extra reinforcement for the passenger and driver and rear passenger doors, that the side impact would not be as easily intruding into the vehicle. That was upgraded. Am I right on that date? I think we said that last week. 94 was that margin?
Yeah, I think, you know, there have been a lot of improvements right. in vehicle safety standards, and the crash tests really push vehicle manufacturers to go beyond what the basic standards require.
Raise the bar.
That's exactly right. Yeah. And there are new crash tests all the time, like the new small overlap frontal crash test done by the Institute, which is aimed at addressing the type of crash scenario where only the front left corner of a vehicle is involved in the crash and is a spot on the vehicle that is vulnerable because it often, in that type of crash, it misses the main crash absorbing structures, which are typically centered in the front center of the front end of the car.
Right, the main part of the structure.
That's right.
Yeah. So you're demonstrating a vulnerability that manufacturers then would otherwise need to address on the roadways where that kind of a crash does and will occur with some of these vehicles. So you're rating that as well.
And the crash tests aren't done willy-nilly. They are based on, as you say, the real-world crashes that occur.
Right.
What are the types of scenarios that people are being seriously injured in?
Yes.
And when we do that research, we see that about a quarter of the serious injuries in frontal crashes are occurring in those small overlap corner crashes.
That's substantial. Well, is there now directing listeners to a good place to go, there is the NHTSA website, that's .gov, and then there's IIHS, which is your organization, the Insurance Institute for Highway Safety, .org.
That's right, and all of our crash test ratings are there. You can even find ratings for used cars.
Okay.
We have test ratings going back to 1995.
Excellent. Okay, and I think people can know that in this economy, we're still not completely out of the woods from 2008. Used cars still have an appeal. And so back to 1995 and current crash tests by the ratings that on the scale of, what is it, poor, good, medium? What's the, help me out with your ratings.
Yeah, good, acceptable, marginal, or poor in 5 different crash tests.
Okay.
And those vehicles that excel in all of the tests earn top safety pick or top safety pick plus, which we list on our website. So you can just at a glance, you don't have to filter or read through all of the different crash tests.
Yeah.
You can see at a glance which ones are performing well across the board.
So I would encourage the audience, I trust you'd appreciate having them think about going there today just for their own curiosity about the car they currently own. IIHS.org. Information there for consumers. Russ Rader, Vice President of Communications for the Insurance Institute for Highway Safety. Thank you.
Thanks very much for having me, as always, Steve.
And thank all of you for joining us for this segment on the World of Wheels. And this brings us to the close of another visit with all of you here on the Car Guy Show. Join us here again next week for another segment from the Coastal Riviera right here in Santa Barbara on News Talk 990 KTMS and the original Car Guy website at thecarguy.com. Keeping you car wise, I'm Steve Ford, the Car Guy.